Welcome to the Cup and Saucy Book Club. I'm Jen.
And I'm Zanna.
What's in your cup today, Zanna?
I'm drinking one of my fandom blends from our first mutual fandom, Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries.
Oh,
this one
Ms.
is
Fisher.
Called Kiss Me Goodnight, and it's chamomile and mint.
That's one of my favorite ones.
It's a good one, yeah. It's kind of later in the evening on the East Coast as we're recording this, so chamomile and mint. Seemed like a good thing. So what's in your cup?
Okay. Well, I may regret having dairy this late in the day, and especially while we're recording. One of us had to do it, and I took one for the team. So I couldn't have anything other than this for our guest today. I have a cookies and cream milkshake. Yeah. And yes, listeners, I went there, and I'm not afraid to say it. So... And if you haven't guessed yet, our guest today is, she's a USA Today bestselling author. She's a fan of velociraptors, also me. Most of the alien movies, red wine, wild adventures. And when not busy at her day job or writing, she can be found pursuing her other passions, which includes riding horses and motorcycles, reading and spending time with family and friends. Her novel, Butcher and Blackbird, is currently on the New York Times top 10 bestseller list for combined print and ebook fiction. And our review episode of that book remains our number one most downloaded episode to date.
It's
so
crazy.
We
yeah,
thank you for
wonderful.
Letting us ride your coattails, Bryn Weaver. It is such a pleasure to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so I had to do the cookies and cream milkshake. I was not afraid.
Did you check the ingredients? Are they fresh?
I watched them make it, which was about as close as I could get.
Did you now? Tell me about the process.
Well, this is from a little like local hamburger place that's nearby me. So.
Oh boy!
Yeah,
you're not making it better.
But. Tastes
so
like
what have you got in your what have you got in your glass, Bryn? It looks like you've got something fun.
I've got a rosé champagne. I was just looking at the label of it and going to pronounce it, and my husband, who is French speaking, you know, born in France, he'll probably like roll his eyes when I try to pronounce it. Louis Roederer champagne. So rosé champagne that we cracked it open the other day for the hitting the top 10 of the New York Times. So I figured I'd better drink it before all the bubbles go away.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what a great celebration to have. So you are the first author that we have had on the show to have a billboard in Times Square for your book. Tell us about that experience, because that just looked amazing.
Yeah, that was really surreal, in the best way. I was coming off of the back of quite a bit of work travel for my day job, so I was kind of like on and off. Like I'd have a week home and then I'd be a week somewhere else. So I did San Diego, Frankfurt, and then Singapore. And then I got back and went there to New York about 5 days later. So I was a little like bamboozled. My head is like not 100% there and I wasn't feeling super great, but it was amazing to see it, and just almost like a weird out of body experience. Like you're really thinking that's my thing up there.
That's me.
It's a little hard to process, like, and it's so, there's such a bombardment of, you know, just sensory things going on, people everywhere and like lights and other billboards. And it was like at one part, because it was actually on three different billboards at the same time. So every 27 seconds it would come on, and it was like right next to the Lion King and Paramount. And it was just, it was wild.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really fun.
Wow.
It was cool. Yeah.
That
does sound very cool, but also very surreal.
Very surreal.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And overwhelming if you're in any way neurodivergent, because that's sensory overload.
Yeah.
And then of course, we had begun our conversation to schedule this while you were in Singapore, I think. And so, yeah, you must have gotten there and just thought, I have no idea what day it is, what time it is.
Yeah, I was still pretty jet lagged. And when I was in Singapore, that was the first time we hit the New York Times list mm-hmm. for the print, the paperback, trade paperback. And I yeah. came out of the shower in Singapore and my phone was on the counter and it was just like lighting up and it was my agent.
Blowing up.
Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So yeah, it was like the whole experience.
Call me back.
Yeah. Just, yeah.
Well, I took a little trip to Target this afternoon and was pleased to see your the book on the shelf. I actually purchased my copy from my local independent bookseller.
Nice.
The couple that owns the shop and I will give the plug today, Alibi Bookshop. But she often recommends to me, because she knows I like cozy murder mysteries too. So she's like, so I've got this book and it's a romantic comedy about two serial killers. Have you heard of it? And I said, well,
let me tell you.
It just so happens. So, yes.
Yes.
So I picked up the book and it's actually... I want to say a thank you, Bryn, because this is actually the first one that my husband has been interested in reading.
Oh, I love that.
Because I cannot get him to read romance normally. So he was
I was telling my husband about the book too, and he was like, that sounds really cool. And I'm like, yeah, it is really cool. You should try it.
So it's obviously an auto buy for us, because I had no problem when I assigned this one to Zanna that, it was just like, yeah, okay, I'll read that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because she's the romance reader between the two of us. And I was always kind of like into true crime and, you know, serial killers and whatnot. And so she was like, it's a rom-com about serial killers. I'm like,
sign me up.
Sign me up. Yep,
so
it's all good.
Was it an easy sell for you from the time that this was first published to just like get it to take off and was that basically what you did to sell it?
It was interesting because I had done a couple of serial killer related books previously, which were collabs. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite a data type of nerd. It's kind of like in my day job. So I love to analyze mm-hmm. things and look at things and compare things from a data perspective. So I thought, well, for this one, I wasn't going to do a pre-order because I wanted to see how that would affect the rankings. So I just kind of like threw it up there and I did all my pre-work that I would normally do because it was self-published originally, right?
Right.
So I did like a cover reveal, I did teasers, I had arcs out, but it wasn't like mm-hmm. a banger of a release. Like it didn't just blow up from the jump, you know? But I did notice that in a lot of the comments that I was getting back and like the reviews that I was being tagged in were like effusive about how much they loved it and like how fun it was and all of that. But I didn't, for a while I thought, okay, it's not gonna really take off or anything. And obviously like as an author, you have hopes that this book is gonna be the one that takes off, you know, but I kind of didn't think it would. And then all of a sudden it started gaining some traction on TikTok and it just, as soon as that started happening, it was like an engine that wouldn't stop, thankfully, in a great way, right? Mm-hmm. It just like, it was like a freight train and it just kept going. Mm-hmm. And a few bigger book talkers picked it up out of the blue. They weren't people that I had sent it to. They just magically picked it up and started posting about it. And then that really got everything going momentum wise. And then I started getting a lot of foreign rights inquiries, which I've had a couple in the past, but didn't really think that much of it. You know, it wasn't something that I was skilled in doing or really because mm-hmm. those books were mm-hmm. like collabs or because I wasn't just focused on taking it in that direction at that time. Like I didn't know what to do with them. And all of them were like, can we speak to your agent? Can we do this? Can we like negotiate a deal? I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, this is so far out of my realm. Yeah. Like, this book is on KU.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, one of the a Hungarian publisher contacted me, same kinds of questions. And I said, honestly, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't have an agent. Do you recommend anybody? And he said, he gave me two names. And one of them was Kim. And on a Sunday, I emailed Kim and I had like, I'm sorry, I know this is very outside the process of querying. I don't know what I'm doing contacting you, but this is like how the book is ranking and it was already taking off. And like, this is how many sales I've had. It's a 3-book series, interconnected, like all the basics, right? And apologized again. Yeah. And within 30 minutes, she was like, oh, I'd like to meet tomorrow. So
thank you for calling me. Yes. I just hit the jackpot.
Yeah. And so like, I think because it's so weird and unusual, like having a dark rom-com with serial killers and having it be like a little horror plus romance plus all these weird things, you know, that aren't commonly connected together, I guess. I think that made it a very easy sell for her. She started going out to foreign, like gathered up all the information that she needed. Like I signed a contract with her on a Monday. By Thursday, she went out to a bunch of foreign publishers. And by Friday we had a preemptive offer for the UK of 6-figure deals. So it's just like, I think cause it was so different and weird,
right.
It probably kind of stood out in an inbox, you know?
Yeah, and you just hit the moment. Yep. And then of course Book Talk, you know, having already had that, now you've got your social media element that's already in place that can do
that. Engine's already still chugging
international promotion without too much trouble.
It is. Yeah. So, and I think like publishers are looking for something that's scalable. Right? Like they want to see it. I don't think that social media is like the one defining thing for success for any author. Like there are definitely authors out there that don't have any social media following at all.
Right.
But I think it's more about indicators of scalability. And because that was already had that engine and because it was doing well on TikTok, like you could see how if a publisher just put a little weight behind it, broadened their reach of it, put it in actual physical stores, which I just couldn't do. I wasn't like, you know, I'm not, I have a day job. I have other things that I need to do.
Sure.
I actually write the book. So like, if they could take it and run with it, then they could make it like that much bigger than I could ever do on my own. So yeah, I think that's a lot of what it was, but it's also, it is a component of luck. There's like alchemy in it and witchcraft probably. I don't know if I sacrificed, I haven't made enough blood sacrifices to the right gods or something. I don't know what that was.
I think Sloane's artwork.
Yeah. It's her artwork. It's what's done it.
Those are your rituals and your altar place. So
I put enough eyeballs on string. So
you know, in this very specific pattern, and so yes, so the stars align for you. I'm gonna go on record as saying this book has the most hilarious trigger warnings we have ever seen.
It's pretty much what sold it. That the trigger warnings plus premise is what sold it for me.
You had us at the trigger warnings for sure, Bryn. And so what is
you had me at not so accidental cannibalism.
I would say I would venture a guess that that's not the first time that you've heard that, right?
Right. Yeah. The accidental cannibalism and the not so accidental cannibalism really draws attention. For me, I thought it was going to be like the lobotomized man, but or the mummy, but no, it was definitely the cannibalism.
Yeah, I mean, those are.
And what's the appeal? Because we've talked about this on the show a few times about what draws, you know, authors, draws readers to dark romance. Mm-hmm. So what is the appeal of dark romance for you?
I think for me, I feel like dark romance is more expansive of a term than what it means for other people, and there's no right or wrong answer whatsoever. But for me, dark is like not just a toxic relationship. Like, I don't enjoy writing toxic relationships that much. So right. I kind of veer away from that. But dark can be other things like murder and chaos and trauma and more murder and accidental cannibalism.
More murder.
You know, those.
Right. And not so accidental cannibalism.
Yeah. But I think like dark, what draws people to it is that, you know, I think humans are, a lot of us, fundamentally drawn to dark subject matter because it is part of our lives, right? Like, a lot of us love true crime and, you right. know, shows like Dexter, things mm-hmm. that have that dark and dangerous element, because you can experience them safely in a book or in a show or in a movie, right? Right? Like, right. you can have that adrenaline rush without actually putting your life in danger. And I mm-hmm. think a lot of the times what is done so well in dark romance is traumatic pasts and how people can mm-hmm. get past their traumatic pasts. They can get beyond that. They're still deserving of love and a happy life, even if they're like mm-hmm. the most morally charcoal person. There's still the possibility.
I like that. Like, morally charcoal.
Morally charcoal.
Yeah.
I think that's, I like that better than great. Morally. I love that. Because that's not just gray. That's like been burnt
burnt to a crisp.
Basically a little bit of ash. But like,
right.
You
right.
know, you still have the potential to have happiness, to find love. I think that's just, humanity is represented very well, I feel like, in a lot of dark romance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why so many people mm-hmm. gravitate towards it. I think there is an idea too that sometimes the love that's represented in dark romance feels a little bit more realistic. I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe it's just for me, but like the people that, the characters that are in dark romance, they have to face so many, oftentimes face so many trials and tribulations to be together, and that's
and they're fundamentally flawed too. And I think that's the thing that's relatable, is because when you've got somebody as a character who's fundamentally flawed, with a lot of the romances that are not the dark romances, you don't have necessarily all of those flaws. And so somebody who can look at it and say, wait, I'm not perfect either. And so this is more like me. I've got dark thoughts. Sometimes the intrusive thoughts win.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to murder anybody, but, you know.
But, you're going to think about it for a little while.
Yeah.
I might.
And sometimes you want somebody who's not like, I don't know, you don't want the hero, you want the villain, you know, you want the villain
Sometimes that villain's so just sexy.
Exactly, right? Yeah, and you want to be the one person that villain loves and adores and would fight for, you know. There's something inherently, it feels like to me anyway, like very romantic about that, as much as that would be troubling in real life. You know, maybe not the best decision making. I do not recommend writing to serial killers in jail. Don't go looking for serial killers.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
It's good to experience this darkness through fiction.
Exactly.
It's not great to experience this darkness.
It is fantasy.
Through. Yeah, it's not great
and that
to experience it.
Yeah, that goes back to what I was saying before about that. It is a safe way to explore these things seem riveting and exciting and dangerous without actually putting yourself into danger. I don't want to go and visit a maximum security prison and hang out with any serial killers. No, thank you. But reading about them in a book, sure. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and same. And we had, so on our show, because of Zanna's interest in true crime podcasts and murder mysteries and everything, all of the male main characters in the books that we review have to go through, be seen through her murder colored glasses. That's what we call them. Yeah. And so Ronan was
he didn't seem that murdery to me. I mean, he's
a cinnamon roll serial killer.
He's a cinnamon roll serial killer. But he's so connected to humanity. Like, he's so connected to his brothers, and he's so connected to the restaurant staff, and he's so committed to Sloane. Like, her, through murder colored glasses, she's murdery as hell. But, you know, I think Sloane is perfectly safe with him.
Yeah. I agree. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
I think
so, you know, whereas some cinnamon rolls I've seen in other books that are, you know, not supposed to be murdery at all, give me huge murder-colored glasses vibes.
The handyman danger. In the small-town romance, she's like, danger, danger, there's all these red flags. And I'm like, what are you looking at?
Like, they one of them should be dead by now.
One of them should be dead. Well, so we sort of speculated when we talked about Butcher and Blackbird was that whether Rowan and Sloane would stay together and what till death. In other words, we sort of redefined till death do us part and speculated that Sloane would probably of the two of them, Sloane would be more likely to kill off Rowan than the other way around, but that she would make
it
him
would be her
masterpiece.
Oh,
it would be like her magnum opus,
right? Interesting.
You know, so
well, he's so supportive of her art. So,
yes.
You know,
yeah.
he would sacrifice himself to be part of that art.
Oh, he would.
Yeah.
But I don't think she would ever go there. No, she loves it.
Probably not. She does love him. Does. I can see that.
Yes.
But
yes, she does.
Yeah.
But she's definitely
more
murderous.
She has so few people.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for her to get to that stage of like, of really trusting him and trusting herself. But yeah, she's absolutely the more murdery of the two. So I saw someone describe Rowan as like the family golden retriever who's amazing, and then every once in a while he'll snap and kill a squirrel, and that's like that is
right.
definitely
yes,
so
right.
Yeah, that's it. That's
yeah,
perfect.
That's it right
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Whereas the Sloane is probably the black cat with just like the daggers for claws that she starts as a kitten.
Yes, 100%. Yes, that is absolutely her.
And they only get more sharp and deadly from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so there's and one of the her people is Lark and. And so Leather and Lark is the second book in the Ruinous Love trilogy. And so what, okay, so I'm going to ask this question as the whole thing.
Yeah.
What can we expect from book two? And what will we not be able to eat after reading?
So I think from book two, you can expect humor, but it is not like a carbon copy of B&B. I did not want to make that. I didn't want to like try and just copy paste the same thing. It is a different story. And it's like these characters are both very complex people who have had extremely traumatic pasts and a lot of responsibility too. I think especially in Lachlan's case, like he was looking after his two brothers, right? And Lark, it turns out, has had a very difficult past. And she feels a lot of responsibility for the people that are around her. So she's very different from Sloane, and their story is obviously like their own story. But I think you can still expect a lot of humor and weird situations, a bit more about both of their pasts and how that's connected as well to Rowan and Sloane, and more of a like the tension of the hate to love, marriage of convenience, forced proximity situation from them. So that's really
we love a forced proximity.
Yeah,
we love forced proximity.
Yeah, and I love like enemies to lovers or hate to love. But there's still that feeling I feel anyway, but I'm biased of you know people that have extremely difficult pasts that find that they are worthy of love and connection with other people, and that they can put themselves out beyond their comfort zone to find that. And then I do potentially ruin some food and also some hobbies. So you could expect potentially some like if you're into DIY crafts, you might like wonder about some DIY crafts from now on. Some people
I have a whole room full of unfinished crafting things.
Lark can finish those off for you with a twist.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And then also probably expect the maybe the unexpected from the ending. Like they get their happily ever after. But I think if.
Yeah, you had quite a twist for us in Butcher and Blackbird.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so there's a little bit of that same vibe going on in this one as well. A little different, but a little similar vibe.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And we, because this is, we knew that it was going to be different. In fact, Lark is so different. I think, I can't remember which one of us commented on this, Xana, but it was almost like for the first part of Butcher and Blackbird, we weren't quite sure if Lark was actually real or a figment of Sloane's imagination.
Right. I love that.
Yeah. Because she was so different from her.
Part of the reason for that is because Sloane is just not really connected to humanity very much. And even with Lark, she treasures Lark, but she has her on a pedestal, which is never where you should have people live, because that's, as we know, that's just that can be kind of a disaster if you have people on a pedestal. And so Lark is like her little toy in a glass box that she has to keep safe. She won't protect herself the same way she'll protect Lark. So if she's in danger, so be it. If Lark is in danger, she will kill everyone you've ever met.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think the kind of heartbreaking thing for me for Lark, and I think there's maybe a little bit more of the like, ouch, heartbreaking moments in this one, is that Lark so desperately wants to feel like she deserves to be in that place. And she will do whatever it takes to be that person for other people. And that makes her life
hard. And that's the
problem
is that you know, because you can't live on a pedestal.
Right.
You absolutely can't. And it's heartbreaking for the people there, and it's heartbreaking for the people who are putting you on the pedestal because it's not sustainable.
And I think she's so good, too, at concealing a lot of that, even from the people that she loves so dearly. And I think that's that was the fun thing for me about writing their relationship, is that because they hate each other, she really doesn't give a shit for the first time that someone sees the worst in her. And like that, I love that, like playing with that idea of like,
it's like a freedom.
Yeah, it's totally. Like
she can be.
It's like, I don't give a fuck.
Real.
I don't give a fuck about you. I can be myself.
Yeah, she literally like kind of says that. She's like, this is really great, actually, because I don't have to pretend. I don't have to try so hard. And he is really the person that
That's
sees
awesome.
How
yeah.
much she, how much effort she really puts into doing this. When other people see this sort of seamless, this beautiful doll in the glass box, you know, and he sees that there's an actual person that struggles to be that way, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So hopefully that's what readers take away from it. But that's what I was feeling when I was writing it.
Excellent.
Yeah, because
I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it.
I am too. I love what you do with tropes, because I am not a fan of a slow burn. This is but Butcher and Blackbird had one of the longest slow burns of like years.
Yeah.
And it was a ridiculously long slow burn, but at the same time, it was just like, oh, good, we're there already, you know? So I felt like you took care of us.
How can you not be a fan of a slow burn? You're also in the Miss Fisher fandom. That's like the ultimate of slow burns.
Well, see, that's why I'm no longer a fan of the slow burn. It's because 3 seasons and all they did was kiss twice or 1.5 times.
Oh, there's got to be a payoff.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, we had to do a whole Kickstarter for a movie to get the payoff. And even then, it was a closed door scene. So, yeah, no. No, I was there for the banter.
Embrace.
And,
I know. Yeah,
and
the banter's great.
The dialogue, I will always gush at an author if they can win me over in dialogue, and you definitely do. It's so quick, and it's so, you know, nobody is giving an inch. And so I love that in your pacing and how you write it all. Is your sense of dialogue, how does that come to you? Does that come to you from, like, are you an observer, or is it
are they talking in your head?
Yeah,
or are they talking in your head? How is that coming to you?
Yeah, they're talking in my head. They're not talking to me. They're talking to one another.
Yeah, you're just kind of listening.
Yeah, and I have heard of other
you're just
people.
Transcribing.
Yeah, I'm transcribing what they're saying. Basically, I've heard of other people saying that their characters talk directly to them. Mine don't do that at all. But I I hear them talking to one another, and it's kind of a building process, right? Like, I will see a scene or a snippet of a scene, and then it's almost like, as I'm starting to describe what I'm seeing, because I see it very vividly and I hear them talking in my head, then it kind of like, it's like building bricks onto it. And I guess for an example in B&B, when I was writing that, I started with the first chapter and a half and I wasn't really sure what I was doing with the book yet. And then I had this idea of like, oh, I love old school horror movies. So I'm going to do an homage to like Texas Chainsaw. And I immediately... saw that, like the saw, I can see the house in the distance. I can see Rowan and Sloan watching and like hear the chainsaw coming to life and hear their banter back and forth about like, oh, do you think he's in the house? And then the chainsaw starts up. But yeah, I think he's in the house. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's
and then
in the house.
Kinda, like, boom, it like blooms from there. I don't know. Like, but I do. I hear them talking to one another in that conversational kind of like, you know, pieces get taken away or put back in, and like it's a process. But yeah, definitely hear them talking to one another.
Well, I definitely got psycho vibes from Mummified Mom, and
I like kind of split that one between the Mummified Mom, that was definitely had a psycho vibe to it, like built into that, and then the scene in West Virginia where they're in the house and he's looking through. So there was like a lot of little things that I tried to put in there just in case anybody was like a big, you know, Albert Hitchcock fan. So like the
little horror Easter eggs.
Little horror Easter eggs. I have to tell you that my husband went off on this one was when we got to the Thorsten scene and he was like, where are the fava beans? Why aren't there any fava beans? And I said, I'm betting that she actually deliberately kept them out because nobody likes fava beans.
Right?
I thought it would be like a little too on the nose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But later on, he did cook liver in that. Or no, he had foie gras. He had like fried foie gras in the restaurant later on. Yeah. I did split that up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Silence of the Lambs, and I remember so vividly, that's how David actually first got in there. I remember I think it was the sequel where he had, I can't remember now if it was an agent or what it was, but he had this guy and he had like gotten part of his brain and was like feeding it to him, and I just remember how like visceral and gross that was. I loved it.
Yes.
Wanted to evoke that same kind of feeling. Yeah.
I think there's also like a real life cannibal case. It was something similar to that too.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Not
there have
brain,
been a few.
Not the brain, but yeah. But like the German guy who invited people over for dinner.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for dinner.
So there has to be a... Yeah, there
for
had to
dinner.
Be a, for dinner.
Yes.
Yeah. The what I love about that scene in particular is just the whole because, you know, you said like that you've got all of these old horror movie Easter eggs and everything throughout, because the whole time you're reading that scene, you're like, get the signal, Rowan. She's sending you all these signals, and just, you know, and it's, and suddenly you are every person sitting in a movie theater going, turn around, he's right behind you.
And she at the same time is also like, I also really want to win this game.
Yeah. It's like, how much do I want to say?
Yeah,
I feel like I should say something.
Yeah, so she's like, get this. Oh.
How far will this go?
Maybe don't eat that. Oh, maybe do eat that. Like, don't know. Yeah, a little on the fence.
She is doing the whole, do I tell him he has rump roast in his teeth? You know, do I say that? You know?
Rump roast.
And yeah, it's just... It's wonderful. And then to have that go from that to this whole no, I have to do all of this correctly, and it has to be. And it's like, you don't know that these people really are serial killers until they get to that portion of their brain that clicks on.
Right.
You know, because the way you do that is so wonderful, because we're not actually seeing them, you know, the killing happen. It's the immediately before and the immediately after. And mm-hmm. and so we can see that, like, where their personalities sort of split apart in order for them to be able to do what they do without a real conscience about it.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And so we've got Leather and Lark coming up, and what's the release date on that one?
The 4th of June. Yep.
4th of June. Can you tell us because it'll already be released. Yeah. Can you tell us the narrators for the audiobook
yes.
on this one?
Eric Nolan will play Lachlan, mm-hmm. and Samantha Brentmore Excellent. Plays Lark. So,
we love Samantha on the show.
I am so excited.
She is one of our.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear her do Lark. Mm-hmm. This is going to be tremendous. And Mr. Nolan is that Irish is going to be very very good.
Yeah.
And so because of the success on Butcher and Blackbird, and I am just going to say success on Leather and Lark, and success on the third book, and, you know, on and on. So how close are you to having author be your day job?
Ooh. Honestly, I really enjoy my day job as well. Like,
okay.
It does get a little difficult, you know, just in that I think it would make it easier to be able to travel to things to do, like book release tours and things like mm-hmm. that. It would definitely be easier if I only had one. And I think also, like, there are times where it, like, comes down to a real crunch where, like, I have literally worked for, like, 20... no exaggeration, like 20 hours. Like, I'll do my day job and then I'll, like, go straight into, like, editing. But I think that, you know, I'm lucky in that I can very much, I'm not neurospicy, I don't think, but I can, like, super focus on a task and do it for hours. Mm-hmm. And I can do that with my day job. And then I can, like, turn that side of my brain off and do it with the book stuff. And I enjoy, yeah, I really love my job. I love the people I work with. And that gives me, they balance each other out, right? Like, I get this scientific, and very much, like, people-oriented side of my life mm-hmm. in my job. And then I get this more, like, solo creative thing with the book. So I think I'm not in, like, a rush to do only writing. It would make it
only
faster
one, yeah.
to turn around yeah. books and stuff. But
right.
I love the people I work with. I'm very, very fortunate to have a wonderful working environment, a wonderful company that I work for that's been, like, very supportive of me, like, and my growth within that company. So yeah.
Do your work colleagues know about your side gig?
Some of them
here?
Do. They're lovely. Mm-hmm. Like, some of them know, like, uh-huh. what, you know, because it is a pen name, so some of them know, like, what I write under,
yeah,
and they're
yeah,
very
yeah.
supportive. Some of them are like, no, if you're not comfortable telling me, like, don't tell me, but we're, like, rooting mm-hmm. for you, and just, yeah, so it's, like, it's a really nice balance, yeah.
So I would imagine, though, a few knew about it when you hit the New York Times bestseller.
Oh, yeah, a few of them knew about that, yeah.
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 That's kind of hard to keep a secret.
It is, yeah. And they've just been so, like, so lovely. And, yeah, I really like it. It's a great place to work. And it's full of some just wonderful, inspiring people. It is very much, like, scientifically oriented, like, what we do. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly in awe of the people that I work with, the way their brains work. Like, and I think in a way that is creative fuel too, right? Like, I'm just, mm-hmm, I'm yeah. very curious about many things and my colleagues.
How people
well.
Work.
Yeah. How
what makes
work.
Them tick.
Exactly. How they think,
yeah.
how they problem solve. Like, I really enjoy that. So, yeah.
That's really important when writing about serial killers, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially problem solving.
And it's wonderful to hear that, because normally it's a, you know, the going into being an author, you're doing whatever you're doing during the day to pay the bills,
right,
until you can have being an author pay the bills.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. it's wonderful and refreshing to hear that, yeah, you know, I'm looking to not really make too many changes. So
yeah, I mean, if I can balance them both, then why not? Like, I don't want to let mm-hmm. like, you know, one shouldn't bleed into the other. Like, that would be wrong. And
right.
I really like,
it's good that you can make that distinction. You can draw that line there.
Yeah.
And that's got to be important, not just for, you know, the individual success in each, but also just to be able to do the day to day of, you know, turning off the day job, being able to write, turning that off, go back to work, and continue on your day to day. So, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, Bren. This has just been a conversation.
We're thrilled.
I'm looking up at the clock and going, really? How do you fly through these things? And I still have so many other.
Oh, ask away. I've still got a quarter glass of champagne. So.
Yeah, and I still have some of my cookies and cream milkshake left. So, but it's, yeah, so we're excited to see Leather and Lark. And so third book is Third Brother?
Yes. Third book is Fionn and Rose.
So it's not a
and Rose. Oh,
she's a little. Yeah, that, yeah, she's a bit of a hell.
She's a spitfire.
Yeah,
she's giving me I don't know why, but she gives me kind of Harley Quinn vibes. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that one too, for sure. And I mean, I'm assuming that it's at least outlined in your head, if not actually written.
Oh, yeah. No. I don't like outline or plot anything.
Okay.
My brain just won't work like that. And I bounce around quite a bit. So
just a pantser.
Yeah, a pantser, like full on. So I do have like a number of scenes, which is a good sign, because mm-hmm. it can get a little terrifying is a good word to use. It can be a little terrifying when pantsing and you're like really against a wall and like, I don't know what mm-hmm. I'm gonna do. But I do have a number of scenes that I want to do for their story. So that's great, because I can just sort of like write scene by scene and then like build them together. But yeah, I think it's definitely still in progress. By the time that mm-hmm. this airs, hopefully I'll actually be quite far down the road, almost done. But yeah, so far it's kind of shaping up, and this could change, so who knows. But it's kind of like fish out of water, like small town. But dark mm-hmm. romantic comedy. She's a circus performer who is injured in a murder that kind of goes awry, because she is a bit of a serial killer, multiple deleter. And then Fionn is kind of like the good brother.
Multiple deleter.
Yeah.
I like that better than serial unaliver.
Yes, and this will right? factor into Leather and Lark, by the way. So...
Oh, good.
Yeah, so okay. It's kind of like small town, and more like she brings out.
Wasn't I saying I wanted a small town dark romance?
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Yes, you were.
And it's like friends with benefits too. So yeah.
Okay.
Forced proximity. Like
we love that.
I am always here for the forced proximity.
Yeah.
Forced proximity plus only one bed is like my sweet spot.
Small town killer romance is all for me. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So even though as a rule, we tend not to do trilogies, we tend to do standalones because we
already did Butcher and Blackbird.
But we already did Butcher and Blackbird, so
I feel like
Leather and Lark is on
going.
The list. And the yet untitled third installment of the Ruinous Love trilogy will definitely be on there too. And it's such a pleasure. It has been such a pleasure. And Bren Wheeler, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. So anytime, I'd love to come back.
Same.
Oh, yes. Please come back. We would love to have you come back. Absolutely. And
well, you know, Samantha said she wanted to come back anytime.
Oh,
so
yes. I'd love to do something with Samantha.
Oh,
sure.
that would be awesome.
Yeah, I think there are and a few Lucy. People we okay. should get in the room.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
We'll
work on that.
we have successfully done it with multiple people in the same interview. So, mm-hmm. yeah, the ladies of the Ruinous Love trilogy. I'm thinking.
That'd
I love
be
it.
Super
I'm having that in my head.
Yeah, that would be really.
That
fun.
Would be amazing.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing. So all the information about Bryn Weaver and links to her socials will be on the show notes page on our website, cupandsaucybooks.com.
You can also follow us on social media at Cup and Saucy Books. We're on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. If you like what you hear, review and subscribe to the show on your favorite pod platform.
Thank you for joining us for the Cup and Saucy Book Club. Join us next time for more great conversations about the world of books.
And probably tangents.
Happy reading.
Cheers.